kids that come to our camp, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, if we're in there to see you, we watch you from the second you get out of your car, the second you get back in your car. You know, we're watching how you treat your parents. We're watching what you do pregame. We're watching what you eat at the concession stand. You know, all those things, they're all important.
No good player has ever said, well, who else is going to be the shortstop? The best players just say, sign who you want. I'm going to beat them, right?
And the other thing for baseball players, if you want to be a great baseball player and play at the highest levels, then be an athlete first.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, where the coaches hang out with Walter. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Baseball Blue Book. If it has to do with baseball, it has to be in the book. The question for you, are you in the book? Now let's join our host, Walter Beattie. Okay, welcome to a special edition. This is what I am calling putting the team back together. We're going to go back 15 years to be exact ago, almost to the month, although it probably started in October, November of 2008. When a gentleman, Rich Gedman, said to me, there are two people you should trust Tyler with when it comes to strength and conditioning. One was Coach Flynn at Holy Cross, and the other was this new guy down in Hudson named Eric Cressy, or Cressy Performance. So we are joined this evening by my son, my youngest son, Tyler Beattie, and Mr. Eric Cressy of Cressy Sports Performance. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
What an intro.
you're getting good with this, my man.
I do it a little bit, you know, and what I'm really anxious is, you know, to talk a little bit, because I'm always talking about, you know, as a dad, and when did I start my sons with strength training and so forth. And I think this is going to be great for those parents that are always asking me questions about the 8 to 13 or 14 year olds. And I think that's what we're going to, you know, kind of start off our conversation here. And I'm going to start first and foremost, Mr. Cressy. I get the question all the time, when is the right time? And I know you and I have discussed this in the past, but I think parents want to know, can children as young as 10 or 11 or younger, you know, have a strength program or stretching program for their young student athlete?
Yeah. You know, I've almost changed the way I answer this question. And I often turn around, when was baseball okay for Tyler? Right. It was when Tyler followed you to the field, when he saw a baseball on the floor in the living room, picked it up and started playing with it.
That's exactly how it started, by the way.
Yeah, more is caught than taught, right? Right. You're around it. You assume it. You know, just like we try to foster, you know, good lifelong patterns for, you know, nutrition and exercise by having the right food options around, by going for family walks, things like that. You know, that's how you learn baseball, right? The baseball just happened to be there. You guys went to games together. Like, obviously you were coaching, he was there. My daughters come to the gym with us all the time. You know, the second we get to the gym, they sprint in, they all grab onto the TRX and they're swinging back and forth. Our kids are into gymnastics, so they're flipping upside down from the pull-up bars and doing cartwheels on the turf and racing each other and pulling each other on the sleds. You know, free play is where it's at that age, but without even realizing it, they are doing strength and conditioning. You know, our twins just turned 9, and we have a 4-year-old that's just as crazy as her older sisters. So my mindset has always been, when they're emotionally mature enough to get involved in something a little bit more structured, whether that's Taekwondo, baseball, figure skating, dance, whatever it is, get them going with it. And we, as long as the programs are age appropriate, like all the stuff about stunning growth and things like that, it's just kind of like an old wives' tale. It's just like anything else. If you walked out and saw your 8-year-old like doing crazy elaborate throwing programs with terrible deliveries, like, that's not healthy. Strength training is the same way. If it looks wrong, it's probably wrong.
Tyler, how old were you when you first can remember, whether it's band work or, you know, playing catch in the backyard? When did the light bulb go off for you as far as, gee, I really want to make my skill set better, I want to get stronger? At what age do you remember that happening for you?
Well, it was, yeah, I mean, like you said, it was about 15 years ago, I would say, when we traded in traded in that winter season of basketball for going to Cressy's and putting more of an emphasis on actually gaining weight and getting stronger in the weight room, just because you kind of, we would see the progression of, like, you'd go into the fall football season, you'd be competitive there, and then you would run and run and run and stay pretty skinny throughout basketball season for me. And then baseball, I kind of reached a little bit of a plateau where it was like velocity would increase, and then I would kind of stay at that. I would say at that age, I was around 80 to 83 miles an hour, probably at 160 pounds. And so, like you said, when Rich Gedman was the one who said, hey, I think you should really kind of take advantage of this opportunity going to Hudson and meeting with Eric and working out there. I remember the first day I walked in, Chris Howard took me through my foam rolling.
Yeah.
Obviously Eric did my assessment, and I can really vividly remember, like, walking in, the turf's on the left. I did the foam rolling around the corner, and I was on the table. He was talking about, you know, doing the sleeper stretch at that time. It was like, let's hammer out some sleeper stretches. And man, it was, I just fell in love with it. I didn't fall in love with the fact. I remember we would be driving back from the gym after a couple of weeks, and I said, I can't even reach to change, to turn up the volume on the radio. I was like, throughout that first year, I mean, I noticed, you know, obviously huge improvements, and it was something that I bought into right away.
Well, I remember that crew with Timmy Collins, Sean Haviland. There was a lot of guys there. It was very intimidating with the chains and all the you know, the weights being clung around. And, you know, Tyler would be going from football practice to Cressy. And then there would be games, you know, on the weekends, and people would be saying, you're nuts. You're driving your kid down during football season. What was that like, Tyler, trying to do fall football and Cressy?
I actually vividly remember, again, like, I would be warming up. It would be Friday night football, right? So I would be warming up for the game. We'd be doing our pregame, and I'd have so much adrenaline, but I was so sore still from the week. Like, I was like, man, I'm sore, but I feel the adrenaline. So we'll go out and we'll play. But, I mean, I think it was just something that I knew I had to make a commitment to do and to balance and maximizing that window of time, where it was also like being a kid, playing multiple sports was a huge emphasis, but like making a commitment to also prioritize getting stronger the right way. I think there's, you know, you can say that you're working out and you're doing something, but if you don't have the right structure, the right program, the right assessment being done, the right program, then you can, you know, potentially be doing more harm than good. So that was the fact that I look back at it, how thankful I am that was 30 minutes from our house. Like, I mean, a lot of kids had to drive hours and hours. You know, I would see them, I'd cross paths with them. They'd say, yeah, I drove in from the Cape or something crazy. Right. So I was just very fortunate that was the case, even though I look back and there would be some long nights where I was waiting for you to get back from your courier route in Maine or something. I was like, hey, I'm done. I'm sitting in the lobby. You're going to come. Yeah. So yeah, long nights, but also incredibly thankful that it was that close too.
I think, you know, I look back on that time too. You know, I'm not even sure we kind of realized what we were building. Like we're just, you know, it's like starting a business and you're just surviving day to day and doing what you're supposed to do to advance from Wednesday to Thursday. But looking back, I think one of the things that we really did well by accident was we set guardrails of kind of like what was acceptable behavior. But we encouraged all our athletes to kind of drive the culture, to, like, you know, let your freak flags fly, be a little weird, make this home. Because at the end of the day, lifting heavy stuff, running fast, jumping high, no matter how novel it is in the start, it can get old, right? Mm-hmm. You look at the success of CrossFit, you know, in part they're successful because there's novelty every day, right? People come in, there's a new workout on the board. Like, that randomness doesn't work when you're Tyler Beatty and you're trying to throw 95 and have a big league changeup. Right. Like, there's an amount of specificity that's really important. So looking back, I'm like, how do you create the novelty while realizing that there's a very specific adaptation we're trying to create? And you do it with the culture. You do it with the people you hang out with. You know that there's going to be some silly human trick in the office every day. There's going to be some special in the cafeteria that's unique or something like that. And I don't think we recognized that we were doing it. It just kind of happened a little bit more organically. But in hindsight, I'm really thankful that it did happen.
Yes. Well, between Tony's Techno Tuesday and Timmy's question of the day that would be written on the the door, it always kept things interesting.
We had a guy who had an aquarium in his cubby. Like, it was like a beta fish for like 3 years in the office. It was insane. Right.
Well, one of the things that I remember you always telling Tyler, and that was, you know, eat. And, you know, parents today, they want to know about this supplement. And before we go down that road and that rabbit hole of supplements, I just want you to kind of inform or give some perspective to making breakfast a priority. You used to always say to Tyler, make sure you get up, have some eggs, you know, food, you know, consuming food and not trying to woof down a pill or a shake. So can you talk a little bit for parents that want to understand that nutrition or that size component, not only is lifting important, but your sleep and your eating is very important.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I think, you know, nutrition is obviously the biggest head scratcher with young athletes. They always have just struggled to see how it directly relates to their performance. But you talk to like major league players that are in their 30s and just like these subtle adjustments can be absolutely life-changing in terms of how they feel. Like the number of guys who walk in the day after Thanksgiving, their joints are all creaky because they, you know, ate a bunch of food that they normally don't do. Like there's heightened sensitivity to it. So we always try to like accelerate that learning curve. Like how can we get guys to pick up on that when they're younger? And you know, what it comes down to is always start with a food log. Like guys have iPhone, you know, notes sections. And I'm just like, hey, just write down everything you eat for a couple of days. It's going to be a remarkable lesson for you because usually the guys that say I eat all the time, they really don't eat that much. You know, you do the math on it and like, hey, my 120-pound wife ate more than you did for breakfast, right? You're like going to like 2-a-day practices and all this stuff. Like, you know, it's just, it doesn't make sense. So I think sometimes, particularly when we're talking about male athletes, they do really well with comparisons and competition. They get competitive. You want to stoke that fire. And just like we can do it in the weight room, we can do it when guys are, you know, playing catch, trying to blow each other's hands up and things like that. Like if you can stoke a little bit of that fire on the nutrition side of things, I think it really goes a long way. So things like weight gain competitions, things like that, we've done those in the past. And, you know, not everybody needs to gain weight. Don't get me wrong, but in certain situations, it can be really helpful. But the number one thing is you got to make them aware of like, this is a problem and it can make a profound difference for you.
Can you talk a little bit about supplementation? You know, and I think we can get a little carried away with protein powders and protein. Yeah. You know, I find the two biggest questions center around creatine.
Yeah.
And is there a multivitamin that we need to take? Is there something that we're deficient in as young athletes?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, the first thing I'll say is creatine is the single most researched supplement in history, right? If you eat red meat, you eat chicken, you're on creatine. It's just that you would have to eat a lot of red meat to get the amount that it would take in a, you know, 5 grams serving. So they're using creatine with astronauts in spaceflight. They're using it for cognitive impacts in the elderly. They're using it to reduce, you know, bone loss, muscle loss in the elderly. Like their implications far beyond the performance realm. And he got a bad rap at one point back in the day because he had some collegiate wrestlers who, you know, dehydrated themselves and, you know, had health issues and they found like elevated levels of creatine in their system. So automatically the supplement became the devil. No, it was guys with really bad lifestyle habits who happened to be taking the supplement. So it was correlation causation, but the research is really, really compelling. It's very safe. You know, like I said, it's naturally occurring. And really what creatine is, you know, if you guys remember high school biology, adenosine triphosphate, you know, you break out a phosphate and it becomes adenosine diphosphate. All it does is basically replenishes those. It allows you to do high intensity exercise a little bit longer. So I describe it as like a calorie on a microscopic level. So you're just giving yourself a little bit more of a substrate for high intensity exercise. You know, obviously though, it's a gateway, right? Where if that's okay, then I'm going to take this blue pill and that red pill. And the guy at GNC is going to sell me on 14 different supplements and I don't know what any of them do. So it's always a conversation about when do you actually, you know, have these discussions. You know, Ty, like you were probably 16, 17 when, you know, we started to think about it, but it was also something where you had made some wholesale nutrition changes. You were eating more vegetables. Like I know you were a guy, didn't have a big appetite in the morning, like didn't love like dairy. So, you know, big heavy shakes weren't great for you. So we'd figured out kind of what worked for you and had to get a little creative with stuff. And I think that's what it's about. So I just come back to a supplement is just that. It's something that supplements a good diet. So, you know, you don't need to go down that rabbit hole until you've made more significant foundational changes. Protein powder to me is convenience based. And the most important thing with all this, make sure you get a, you know, like a pure supplement, something that's like an NSF certified, you know, which just guarantees that you actually get what you're getting, or what you want to get. A lot of those things are tainted. They're used, you know, they're made in factories that make, you know, other supplements that, you know, may have ingredients you don't want in your system. So just make sure you use a reputable company that goes through that stringent third-party testing.
Tyler, you want to talk about NSF certified? Because I don't think a lot of parents understand that when I try to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, essentially it's just supplements that are certified for sport is my understanding. And so under the MLB drug testing protocol and program, we are only allowed to take supplements that are NSF certified. If you don't, you're toeing the line potentially when you take a drug test. Like Eric said, those companies are making other supplements that you don't know what's in them. So you don't know that the label is accurate to what you're taking. And so when you fail, if you potentially fail a drug test, it's on you, right? So there's just more risk. And obviously you're just, for me, I stick to taking, you know, supplements from a company like Thorne, which is, you know, you see it in every MLB, MILB, training room, locker room, weight room, whatever it may be, because they are, you know, third-party tested. And so, yeah, I think for me, in the way that I supplement, you know, if it's specific to either blood work that I've done in the past, you know, deficiencies that I have in my diet, in my blood work. And so I've just kind of gone the extra length to figure out, you know, me personally, what am I deficient in from vitamins, whatever it may be. And so I do take creatine as well. And a bunch of other stuff that to me is just, like I said, I've kind of done my due diligence. Like, this is what my body needs at this stage of life. And I'll do another set of blood work in another, you know, 4 months or so and check what I would need to supplement then.
Yeah. You know, Eric, another big part of questions that I get from parents is how accurate is the remote training program that Cressy offers? Now, if you hear me, you may not listen to everything that I do. I listen to a lot of things you do, but I'm talking Cressy. And parents are like, well, I live in Iowa. I live in California. I can't just hop on a plane and go to Hudson or Jupiter, Florida. So is there truly a remote component for younger athletes or high school athletes to be able to work with your trainers?
Yeah, I think the modern technology is so much better than it was 10 years ago. You know, our thing, we've done online training. I mean, I've worked with people. I have a pro golfer in the UK that I've been writing programs for since literally 2003. We're 20 years together.
That's so awesome.
It's come a long way since then. But what's really interesting, I think, is how much more we have tech at our fingertips to make it better. Like, we're actually doing some pretty significant like app development in this space just because we know we can make it even better than it is now. But for a long time, we were like, hey, we want to see you in person, at least kind of like get an in-person assessment, spend a little bit of time together, excuse me. And then once we've had that, you know, kind of chance to do a crash course on the front end, then we can do a lot more remote stuff. And we had a lot of success with that. And we still kind of like prefer that way to do it. With that said, we do some stuff now where guys, you know, start up purely remotely. And, you know, because at the end of the day, it, like, for some people, they just don't have anything where they are, right? They're, you know, in the middle of nowhere in North Dakota or something, and there's just not a good gym. There's not a, you know, access in any regard. And there are a lot of offerings in the online space now, not just in terms of strength and conditioning, but in terms of, you know, pitching deliveries and grip stuff and all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's come a long way, and it's actually a really viable option for a lot of young athletes. You know, particularly if they're, you know, kids who are high motivation, who are really driven, you know, those guys that really just need direction. Is it a great option for someone that needs a motivator? I don't know. Like, if you're intrinsically motivated, you'll go get it. You'll probably do well with it. But if you're a guy that counts on having like five buddies at the gym to drag you out of bed to get you there at 6 a.m. it's probably not the right fit for you. And that's probably someone who needs to find something more brick and mortar with them. But, you know, like certain guys, you know, handle it great, you know, that can follow everything to the T. Like Ty, you did it when you were at Lawrence Academy again. Like, it wasn't easy to get to CSP every day, but you would do it. I want to say it was like Wednesday, Saturdays, you'd come down to CSP, and then you'd have a couple lifts that you do on campus up there.
Like, yeah.
But you were a special breed, man. Like, you were willing to, you know, sacrifice a lot to do that. So just not everybody is that committed. So you gotta figure out what kind of person you are.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you don't mind me speaking to that, I would say what you were referring to earlier with the atmosphere that you created, almost if not by accident, it was, I mean, to me, that was a huge separator. Like the fact that we would go in and you would see your name up on the, you know, the deadlift board, and it was like you were number eight, and it's like you wanted to continue to move up, and you saw other kids your age, your peers, or even a little bit of the older guys getting after it. And that, I mean, to me, that was massive. Like, I didn't know it then, but looking back at it, the atmosphere that was created there, training with your peers is huge. And even though I was, you know, internally motivated and I could do some workouts wherever I was at and get things done, even to this day, training at my warehouse, like, I need other guys to be there. Like, I'll get a workout done by myself, but when other guys are there and we're pushing each other, it matters. And so I think the remote stuff, obviously, you know, there's unique scenarios and cases where whenever you can, if you can pop in and see Cressy and get an assessment done and you train back where you're at, like, there's obviously value in that, tons of value. I've done that for years since being in Texas. But if you can, like you said, brick and mortar, like, you get to a place where you're training with a bunch of your other buddies and getting after it, there's so much value in that.
Well, what I want to now segue into is the real value, in my opinion, of Cressy Performance is the true mentoring that goes on around you. And in other words, you may not interact with everybody there, but you're watching the energy, you're watching the work ethic. But in my opinion, and this is really going to the parent perspective, I felt it was really great for Tyler to be able to ask those questions of slightly older athletes to talk about decisions they were making, whether that be, you know, beers with the guys or things that they were maybe putting in their body or being in places they shouldn't be. The mentoring that goes on at a facility such as Cressy Performance, I think, is invaluable. Could you speak to that a little bit, Eric?
Yeah. You know, it's actually hilarious. I we're redoing our website. Our website is brutal, right? But it doesn't convey at all like what our facility looks like. We've just been so busy, like, training people and all that. It just hasn't been back burner. So Anna, my wife, who is really involved in our operations, is like, we're doing this. We're like, so she hired a photographer and everything. She's like, you know, we need to like describe what happens, what makes this place unique. And, you know, she's like talking about service offering, and she was walking on the floor, and Justin Verlander and Tanner Houck just randomly got into a conversation the other day, and they're very different, right? Tanner's loosey goosey, arms and legs flying everywhere. He's got a real big, like, you know, sweepy slider, and Justin's really high slot, gyro slider, all this stuff. And Justin's like, in the middle of his workout, just stopped for 10 minutes. He's like, this is why you're struggling in this situation. This kind of guy would hit well against you. This guy wouldn't. And I just stood there. We have a new pitching coach. We just hired Mario, and, you know, he'd worked in pro ball last year, and he's just like standing there with his jaw dropped open. And I was like, that's the stuff we can't teach you. Like, we can make every PowerPoint in the world, but we also can't like market it. It just happens organically. But to see a guy who's got, you know, 3,000 plus innings, 3 Cy Youngs, like, take time out to, you know, talk to a guy mid 20s about attacking hitters. And like, you know, it's, they're on different teams. Like, they probably face off against each other. Like, I never fathomed that would happen the way that it does. I mean, I saw Scherzer take Lizardo under his wing. They're in the same division. It's been really, really cool to see it. And like, you know, Ty got it. We just didn't know it was happening. Like, he was, you know, it was kind of like when I was just like a dumb, you know, 23-year-old grad student who took up powerlifting. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go squat with a bunch of guys who squat 900 pounds, and I think I'll get stronger. It worked. I think the same thing happened, but I remember, like, just to that environment stuff, like, thinking back to Ty and him and John Gorman just like blowing each other up in that cage. Like, it was competitive, and it was because those guys, you know, A, they didn't want to be outdone by a training partner, but B, they were also competing against a collection of pro guys that were like next level. And it made me think, like, Pete Sampras like lost in the 18s when he could have been winning the 12s. So I think anytime you can get guys like older athletes and, you know, people that will challenge them in different ways and mentor them in the process, it's an absolute difference maker.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I do want to touch on is with regard to youth sports is from a parenting perspective, you know, and I think you both can offer a very unique perspective. You know, it took me a while to just kind of drop Tyler off and just say, okay, this is your time. I'm going to go sit in the calf, or I'm going to go sit out in the car. Can you just talk about the acknowledgement? And Tyler, I want you to weigh in on this as well. As far as being taking control of your daily routine or your disciplines, and whereas, you know what, Dad, I got this, you can go, kind of thing. And when does that happen, Eric? Typically, what age do you see that occurring at Cressy Performance?
You want to go first, Ty? You want me to? I don't know if there was a question for Ty as well.
I think Ty can talk to, you know, hey, listen, Big Walt stepped away when I was like 15. Yeah. And I had to, you know, I had to step in and work, do my own workout. And I had to trust Eric. You know, there was a parent trust component. Okay, he's in good hands. And then there's the student athlete's decision. I got this. I can do this on my own.
Well, I think the first thing I'll say is one of the things that I think is important for any like coach, business owner, whatever it is you need to give your prospects a way to perceive your expertise in different ways. All right. So like case in point, Walt, I know you said you're coming to Florida next week. All right. So you hop in the car to go to Logan Airport, right? You pass a Dunkin' Donuts on the drive there. You don't buy a coffee. You patch a Dunkin' Donuts billboard on 93 South. You don't buy one, right? Advertisement comes on the radio. You don't buy one. You get an alert on Twitter, Dunkin' Donuts ad, whatever it is. You pass the one in the plane on your way to the plane at Logan. And in the old days, I think they said it was like 7 marketing exposures. If you weren't going to purchase, you weren't purchasing. That was it, right? Mm-hmm. It was a done deal. Nowadays, we get bombarded with so many marketing messages. People get pulled in so many directions, and they're constantly like, you know, checking their email, checking their social media, all that stuff. I think people are really overwhelmed. So what happens is the individual marketing message is you're desensitized to it, right? It might take 100 interactions to realize like, hey, this is something that could be useful for me. Back when Ty was, you know, sophomore in high school, 2008, like I didn't think I had Twitter back then. I'm not sure it existed, right? But what I think we did without realizing is, all right, so you talked to Rich. He said, hey, my daughter's worked out there. I think it could be really good for him. And then what'd you do? You talked to some other players' parents who had been in there. Then you came by, you picked our brain, you know, first to see, like, hey, is this someone that I would want my 15-year-old kid to spend time around? If I had met you in the door with a big old lip in and I was dropping bombs left and right, there were N-words on the radio, like that would not have been a good fit for Ty. But instead, like, we gave you opportunities to perceive our expertise differently. Maybe it was, you know, the framed jerseys on the wall or something like that. I don't know. Everyone had something different. Like I know, one mom told me that she knew it was the right fit for her son because I knew how to properly use a semicolon, and she was a writer and like, hey, that's meticulous prep. Like everyone else kind of writes like it's just a text message. I'm like, awesome. Whatever votes your votes. We did that to make people feel comfortable. And there were a lot of different ways you could get exposures to it, whether it was just the people you interacted with, the energy, whatever it was. So that's something that I've always had in the back of my mind as the business has grown, is I want to make sure that we appreciate that this is like a really big responsibility. Like we switched our daughters from one gymnastics place to another because I didn't think the coaches even knew their names. Like I had no confidence that like they were treated as individuals. And that's a big deal when you have twins, right? You want them to have their own identities. We went to this new place and they've absolutely thrived. It's been awesome. Mm-hmm. And you no longer drive, I'll happily do it because they've spread their wings and been great. So that was an important thing for me, is that they knew the kids' names. They met them at the door. They made it fun. They were learning new skills. Like we had opportunities. So that's a big thing for before you're going to let go. Like you've got to know somebody and like them before you're going to trust them. So I think we did that. And, you know, it was good. We had a lot of conversations just about baseball in general that I think helped Tyler's like dynamic. When Euclid was training, I remember there'd be a couple of times when you'd be grabbing like lunch in the building and we'd have just this impromptu, like 45-minute conversation about hitting with a, you know, that guy was a top 5 perennial MVP candidate. So I think that helped the cause as well. But I really come back to like, before any of the training knowledge or any of that, there's a lot of different ways to get athletes bigger, stronger, faster. You know, you can throw weighted balls, you can throw a long toss, you can throw underweight, you can throw overweight, it doesn't matter. But I think when it comes back to it, like what's right socially for your child is like the most important situation.
When did you feel like you were ready to fly, like without the old man like telling you what you had to do or should do?
Well, I mean, I guess fortunately, Mike, it wasn't as if you were like a helicopter parent. I think from the jump, you know, you kind of gave me the freedom to explore and pursue what I was capable of, in a sense, in a great way. You cultivated a great environment for me to do that. And so, yeah, I think it was right around that age. I mean, because obviously you look at it, I was 15. I had another year probably or so, a year and a half at Auburn High before I decided to explore the opportunity at Lawrence Academy, where I would be living away from home. And so obviously there were moments where, you know, I was given the freedom to kind of make some decisions on my own and sort of be on my own in that environment, at least to feel comfortable enough to go live away from home and be at Lawrence Academy. And so, you know, you can probably point to 16 years old where I kind of felt the self-confidence to say, okay, I can go kind of do this thing and function on my own and live away from, you know, kind of the, you got to do your laundry now. You got to kind of take care of yourself, figure out what you're going to eat for dinner. You know, are you going to go to bed at the right time? What's your time management going to look like? And so that kind of first year at Lawrence Academy was there were some growing pains, but it was massive for me. And like I tell people, I almost feel like I was living the college experience at 16, just kind of from that perspective of trying to figure out what it's like to be an adult and make adult decisions and live away from home, even though it was only about 45 minutes or so. I felt that freedom, but that was when I really figured out, you know, that you need to make routines and have good habits and time management. And there were some things that I did just out of kind of habit and nature because of when I was 15 going to Cressy's and knowing that I needed to prioritize working out or nutrition. And that schedule was sort of just like implemented naturally because of that. And then as I kind of got to Lawrence Academy, those things happened naturally. But, you know, I can talk about college and pro ball and where I'm at even now. There's always fine tuning the routine and figuring out what works and what doesn't, and kind of being flexible to be open to changing the routine if needed.
You know, I'm gonna
interject. I think you guys will actually appreciate this timely. So I came prepared to this interview. So one of the things that I always do is I actually always say thank you notes, like go back and review them, things like that. So this is a Walter Beatty email from March 8th,
yes,
2009. Ty, you're gonna tear up, man. So it says, "Dear Eric, I wanted to take a minute to send along a sincere and heartfelt appreciation for all you and Pete have done for Tyler. He truly looks up to you guys and all the guys there that work out. In no way did I ever think Ty would get into his workouts as much as he has. Tyler has been going through a tough time and thought I would share with you. Many of his peers have begun to do teenage things like beer, dip, chew, etc. Tyler was very close to all these kids all his life. He's made the choice to not hang around these kids when they are doing this stuff. I'm proud of the decisions he's making in his life. Your facility has become a sanctuary for him. I think Sawhill has become a role model for Ty. I feel that with your continued help and guidance, Tyler's dream of playing college baseball will come to fruition. Again, Eric, you've exceeded all my expectations with regard to Tyler. He's become a better young man, both physically and internally. The staff, as well as participants, are all first-class people, and I cannot be happier. Thank you, Walter." So there's a lot of lessons in there. Like, first off, people think Tyler Beatty, first-round draft pick twice, Vanderbilt National Championship, major leaguer, they think that you just rolled out of the womb like this. And also that it was like this crazy overbearing situation. You had a dad that literally just wanted to put you in an environment where you would become a good human. Mm-hmm. And he knew that your dream was to play college baseball. There was no delusion of pro baseball there. It was, I think he was aware of understanding how baseball could impact like academic success and all that. But like, yeah. People look back on it and they thought we were just like preparing for the draft. Like, no, we were building human, like trying to teach some foundational habits. And we knew that if the processes were really good, the outcomes were to take care of themselves. But I think the other thing is like the training program can be perfect, but if the stuff outside of the gym isn't, that's where you get into trouble. And that's where you realize like the gym or something like that is, it's the third place. There's home, in your case, there's school. And then there's the third place, which is, was for UCSB. Like, that's a big deal. And we've always tried to create an environment where it was like the third place. I don't know if I knew it that well back then, but I wanted people to linger, to hang out, because I knew it would potentially push out stupid behaviors and teenage kids that were drawn to stupidity.
Well, I really want to go, first of all, that was 2009. So it kind of evoked some mental memories in my head. But one of the one of the things that I always wanted to do as a dad, you know, with both the boys, was try to get them to understand the challenges, the hurdles, the obstacles. We call them failure struggles. Mm-hmm. But anytime there was a struggle from 2008 through today, I think one of the greatest tributes to Cressy Performance, and obviously you, Eric, directly, as well as Anna, is to this day, Tyler has an ache, a pain, a process. I'm going to reach out to Eric. And I think we overlook the struggles of teenage boys growing up and some of the decisions they're forced to make, some of the environments that they find themselves in, and having mentors such as yourself. And one very vivid memory that occurred in the summer of 2010 is Tyler gets cut from Team USA, 18U team. And it was the same reaction he had when he first played for the Canes, where I expected him to be very down and disappointed. And he got into the Black Betty, my car, we affectionately referred
yes.
to. And his first words were, "I now know what I need to work on. I can't wait to get back into the gym." And it was almost like that Rocky moment twice occurring in his life that were really big forks in the road. And I tell people that all the time. When I talk strength, I don't just talk about moving weight. I talk about having a release point, a mentor that you can confide in. And I really find that was my, I think, my peace of mind as a dad, to know that when I would turn, I don't like to say turn over, but when Tyler would walk through that door at 577 Main Street, I knew it was an environment that was not only from an athletic perspective, but a nurturing. And I think that's a big part of being a student athlete. Can you talk to that a little bit? Because you deal with it in Florida as well as Mass now. You know, teenage athletes go through a massive learning curve.
Oh, it's incredible. And actually, I had Zach Galifianakis on my podcast. It's coming out Friday. We just did the interview today and we were just talking about it. It's like I went back and I looked at Zach's high school numbers. They were like comic book, like set every Delaware record, not just in baseball, but in like soccer. He was 81 for 81 in stolen bases in his high school career. Like our best shortstop in the history of the state. And he goes to Virginia. It's like, yeah, you're a third baseman now. Like just changed on a dime. And I think so many people just have a really hard time appreciating how many really good players are out there. Like, I've heard, you know, in the tennis community, I remember Jeff Salzenstein, who was a top 50 player in the world at one point. He was like, if you don't win the NCAA championship and dominate, don't even think about trying to go pro, because there are so many guys that never even went to college, international players that have sold out for the dream at age 7, way behind. It's just, everyone can get really big for their britches when they hit 350 in their hometown, but they don't realize that the next level is going to be everybody who was already the best player in the history of their hometown. So it's tough. It's hard to teach that to young kids because they're not nearly as equipped to handle failure as they used to be. Like Ty, I mean, you were in that room with Team USA. I was in that room in 2015. We cut Ben Rohrvet from that roster. Yeah. He's on our major league roster catching Garrett Cole. Like we cut Alex Kirilov was a first rounder on that roster. They cut Mike Trout from that team when he was in high school. And you know, you took that like punch in the mouth and you came back and you worked your tail off like on another level over the next year. I don't think many kids do that these days. It's very different. You know, we've gone from having helicopter parents to having like snowplow parents. It's like, oh, I don't want my fail. I just want to clear the way for him.
Yeah.
Wow. I never heard that. So Ty, talk to that issue of dealing with turmoil and struggle.
Yeah. I mean, you need to have a process in place to where when things happen, because they're going to happen, you're going to have failure. You're going to have, I mean, it's baseball, any sport too in general, but especially baseball, a game of failure, you know, and some of it is just naturally. I think my natural instincts were, you know, this isn't going to be something that, you know, keeps me down. It's going to be something that propels me forward. Just because that was my motor, that was my internal drive. And so, yeah, anytime there was adversity like that, and that was a pivotal moment to speak to that Team USA moment, because I felt like I was, I felt like internally I was ready and prepared for it. And more than anything, I knew that there was still room to improve. And so I think like even that summer when I went back and trained, it was like, I think I went back for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then I went off to Pennsylvania and it was the first time I had hit 90 and I hit 92. And I, you know, that was kind of really what propelled me to develop even further than where I was at during when I was in Cary, North Carolina. And so there were so many instances throughout when I was younger where you kind of exposed me to a higher level of talent and that, you know, it was almost either inevitable that I would kind of face some adversity or my back would be against the wall in a sense. And I would need to respond in a way that would say, hey, look, if you want to play at this level, this is the level of talent that you're going to need to be exposed to. And this is how much you're going to need to improve. And so it wasn't as if you told me that. It was just, I think I understood that naturally that, hey, look, this is what you need to do to improve. And so thankfully I was exposed to those certain environments where it wasn't like you were like, hey, let's go play, you know, where you're only going to dominate, right? Let's go play locally. Or not that that's a bad thing, but for me and where I was at and my kind of passions of getting to play higher level baseball, it was like, all right, well, let's go see what you got and let's go see how you respond to it. And so you did a good job of putting me in those scenarios when I was ready. And when I did face adversity, you put me in the right scenarios and hands to go and improve and get better at what I needed to get better at. And so I was thankful for that.
I think it's good to acknowledge that it's failure is part of the process. Like right. I tell the story a lot of, I can't remember who you were pitching against, but there was an outing like your senior year, you were like 92 to 95, you know.
Middlesex.
It was draft stock surging. And then I think Middlesex, I distinctly remember it because I was late to the game.
Yep.
And as I'm walking in from the parking lot, this dude's legging out a triple. They didn't have a fence.
Right.
So he got off the game, hit a triple, ran about a quarter mile. And then that day he was like 90-91. And like the world was freaking out. I'm pretty sure the Red Sox were there to see you that day. It was like, you know, 30 scouts behind the backstop and the world is freaking out. And I remember you beat yourself up about it pretty good. I was like, dude, like the best big leaguers on the planet don't have consistent velocity. Like their delivery, like your team, like we got a lot of time to sort this stuff out. And sure enough, like the next week you were like 4-6 and
yeah,
you know, ISL, you know, championship and all this stuff. It was just like, these are all like blips. Like no, like you watch Clayton Kershaw, Garrett Cole, these guys, they're going to usually have a clunker, you know, once or twice a year. And
for sure,
high school kid to like repeat their delivery and perform at a high level every single time out, like it's just not realistic. So you got to embrace that failure as just like a bump in the road that's part of the process.
Yep.
Well, I think what was great about Ty was he loved to steal bases. So, you know, there were some games where he'd steal second and, oh, by the way, steal third, you know, then he'd grab his glove and go out and play. And I encourage, I always tell parents all the time, let your kids play. Don't worry about if they're two-way guys. You know, not everybody's going to be Ohtani, but, you know, until they get to college and a coach tells you, you're not going to hit. You know, just let them play. Don't make that decision for them early. So I want to be respectful because I know we're dealing with dads with children, and I don't want to take up any more of your time. I thoroughly enjoy this. I think it's tremendous insight for families and student athletes to kind of see this is a 15, 16-year relationship that goes far beyond just throwing weights around. There's a lot more involved here. And I thank you both for allowing me to share in this, for Eric, for all that you've done for our family and the mashed potatoes that you served at your home.
I was just thinking that.
2011.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, that's the highlight of my picture. I have Tyler with a spoonful of Cressy mashed potatoes. But Eric, I know that you're a very busy man. I'm going to put all of the content. Eric has a podcast. He has all kinds of books. I'm going to put all of that information down below in our interview. You can listen to this in a podcast as well as watch it at any time on our YouTube channel. Thank you, gentlemen, very, very much. Ty, I love you. Eric, thank you so much for taking a long time tonight to join us and chat with us.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. Hey, love you guys.
All right, guys. And now next week, I want to let everybody know we're going to have John Savage from UCLA. He's going to take some time to talk not only college baseball and his move to the Big Ten, but also the new mega division that's being discussed across Division I athletics. So be sure and join us next week on Thursday evening when we speak with John Savage from UCLA. Thanks, guys.
All right. Appreciate it.